sahanavavatu sahanobhunatu sahavirayankaravavahai tejasvinavadhitamastamavidvishavahai Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Let him destroy the taints through suppressions of the breath, the production of sin by fixed attention, all sensual attachments by restraining his senses and organs, and all false identity by contemplation. Riti. The taints are the dualities such as love and hate. Destruction of the production of sin by fixed attention indicates focus on one's prescribed duties. All false identity can be removed by contemplating the distinction between matter and spirit and the natural constitutional position of the soul. So if one's focused on what one's doing, then one will perform proper activity. Sin comes from improper activity. So if the activity is proper, then the sin will be destroyed. Then sensual attachments by just not engaging in anything along that line. It means if there's some attachment, you don't engage in anything connected with that attachment, basically. Or it means that if it's something within the range of what you're supposed to be doing, then since the result's for Krishna anyway, then it's not for you, so then it will be, again, the desire for it will go down. You perform an activity, you want to do it again. If the opportunity comes up, you don't do it, or you're doing it appropriately, then that desire to do it inappropriately eventually runs out. Right? There's only so much stock that's there. And false identity, if we always contemplate that we are servants of the Lord with the soul, then we don't have a problem with the false identity that I'm the controller and enjoyer. Let him recognize by the practice of meditation the progress of the individual soul through beings of various kinds, a progress hard to understand for unregenerate men. Now, how the soul is moving from body to body. You know, what are the cause of what activities get which bodies? So understanding all that, then you just see the souls by their activities are moving through these things. So it's another thing that removes the interest, right? Because it has some social, economic benefits, or essential benefits. Therefore, we may be attracted by certain situations. But if we understand people get in these by their activities, therefore they move through the different stages of life, the different species of life, you know, different situations, then it doesn't have the same interest. He who possesses the true insight into the nature of the world is not fettered by his deeds. A fettered means to be bound. But he who is destitute of that insight is drawn into the circle of births and deaths. Right? If you understand how the world is actually working, you're not bound. If you don't understand how it's working, then you're bound. It's that simple. By not injuring any creatures, by detaching the senses from objects of enjoyment, by the rites prescribed in the Veda, and by rigorously practicing austerities, men gain that state even in this world. Right? Yeah, so you don't injure any creature, means physically, emotionally, intellectually, by detaching the senses. So the grihastha is engaging the senses. The sannyasi is not engaging the senses. But the principle is still Krishna. But it's a matter of how you're relating with Krishna. Right? There's attraction. You're relating by engaging properly in that attraction. Or if there's attraction, you're relating by not interacting. Right? So then Krishna takes on the form of that detachment, of that renunciation. Does that make sense? So the point is there's a sense object, so therefore one can either relate to it in an appropriate way according to whatever would be engagement with that sense and sense object to get a proper result. Or one could relate to that object by detachment, and so that's the actual nature or the quality of Krishna that you're looking at. Right? Because in any one object, there's so many qualities in Krishna you could see in there. So it's just which one you choose. The point is you're interacting with Krishna anyway. There's not a question of not interacting with Krishna, but it's just a matter of by engaging the senses, or in this case, by not engaging the senses. Yeah? Does that make sense? Yeah.
So Krishna is always when we interact with his energy in the proper way, and if it's not our duty, we don't interact, he's equally pleased.
Yes. The point is you're performing your duty. Because if you're performing your duty, you're going to perform the action, and the result is for Krishna, so it's Naishkarmya, so there's no entanglement. If it's not your duty, you're not getting involved, but you're doing that to please Krishna, so there's also no entanglement. Even though the second one would give a better form of entanglement. You would get a gold chain instead of a silver or iron chain. Right? But in any case, whatever it is, then you're free from that entanglement. Briti, this verse refers to the activities of the transcendentalist. Gaining that state indicates the attainment of transcendence, the consciousness described in the previous verse. Rather than that state, some give the translation as that being, meaning the attainment of the Lord's association. Right? So that state means, in any case, that state can be a state of consciousness, can also be the situation. You know, you can say state of affairs, what's politically going on, state of mind, state, you know, so many things. State simply means what is the situation. So here then is pointing out that some refer to it as being in the Lord's association, meaning that state, meaning on the transcendental platform in association with the Lord. Let him quit this dwelling composed of the five elements. For the bones are the beams, which is held together by tendons instead of cords. For the flesh and blood are the mortar, which is thatched with the skin, which is foul-smelling, filled with urine and ordure, infested by old age and sorrow, the seat of disease, harassed by pain, gloomy with passion, and perishable. A further expansion on, you know, just a bag of, you know, stool and urine. Right? So this is quite well well developed. Yes, detailed. Yeah, but it's a whole structure, right? Because it makes sense, you know, how it's held together. How you'd make any structure hold together like that. I always thought it was interesting because all those, but gloomy with passion. I thought that was very interesting. Because passion creates that gloom. There's that inspiration, but if it doesn't work, then one's gloomy. So, and most of the time, it never works. So, gloomy with passion and perishable. Now, after all that, then it perishes. Right? The statement "gloomy with passion" indicates the non-fulfillment of desires creates distress. He who leaves this body, be it by necessity, as a tree that is torn from the riverbank, or freely like a bird that quits a tree, is freed from the misery of this world, dreadful like a shark. Right? So whether the person is just, he awaits the time, and at the time then he leaves the body, just as, you know, it's just carried out by the natural course of events, just like the tree on the bank of the river, is there, and slowly its roots are washed away until it falls into the river. Or the person is something of a yogi, so he can leave whenever he wants. The point is one leaves the body, right? And so that, therefore, one is freed from the misery of this world. Right? And no, that's based on having the previous encounter. Having, by the practice of meditation, understood other living beings to be only an instrument for the reaction of his previously performed good and bad actions, he attains the state of eternal Brahman. Viti. One who understands correctly does not blame others for one's own misfortune. Thus he avoids the cycle of rebirth caused by the desire for the fulfillment of justice. Yet, the difficulty with justice is you need to come back to fulfill it. Right? That's one difficulty with that. So the point is that how someone performs an activity and you get some result that you don't feel is very nice. But the point is they actually the soul is not who's done it. It's simply the modes of nature's carried it out. That soul happened to be just having desires that got connected up with that. But they're not actually the doer. Just like we're not the doer, nobody else is the doer either. You know what I'm saying? It's not that, oh, I'm only engaged in Krishna service, I'm not the doer, but everybody else does something, then it's their fault. So that's the... Very negative.
Yeah.
You want it to be more pleasant.
Let's say in the Krishna consciousness, you can hear more pleasant description, right? More about Krishna and his heart being. Here we just hear about how you have to renounce. And we say that being the devil, spirit.
Does it sound appealing? This is sannyas. This section is sannyas. No, we finished by it. Now we're on sannyas. Notice in Vanaprasa didn't talk about bags of stool and urine, so therefore. Therefore it is, I say, a sapatni complaint. Does that make sense? But this is sannyas, so it's not sapatni compliant. So, therefore.
It shouldn't be.
It doesn't need to be a peeve. The point is what's bringing out here, it's not so much bringing out the negative, it's just looking at things as they are without putting any, like, element of inspiration on it that, you know, it can be connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? Because the point is the body is like that. It's just a matter of when it's younger, it doesn't bother you as much. You know, some of the things aren't there. You know what I'm saying? You take enough baths, you use enough perfume, it's not foul smelling. Right? We can't really get away from filled with urine and ordure, infested by old age and sorrow, you know, so seed of disease, harassed by pain, then that generally, unless it's a bad day, then, you know, it's not like that. Gloomy with passion because we still have some hope that, you know, the passion will work. And perishable, that's for later, you know. So, but it's just bringing out, you know, the reality of what things are, so therefore one doesn't put much importance on it other than just the, you know, basic connection to Krishna. Because at this stage, it's not necessarily that they're doing so much activity or anything, a variety of activity. So it's just studying, traveling, preaching, that's all. So then it's just the reality. So since that will come up, you're not disturbed by it. You know, disease is there, you know, you deal with it. If it goes away, nice. If it doesn't go away, that's just the nature of the body. You know what I'm saying? You know, when you're younger, then you make an effort to get rid of the disease. Right? When you're older, you make an endeavor, but if it doesn't really work, then you just kind of leave it. You know what I'm saying? When you're younger, you try this, that, everything, in all directions. And, you know, does that make sense? So it's just a matter of, it's the reality of what's there. And so it's. But the point is since that's the reality, and life is going on, then, you know, it's just the state of existence. You know what I'm saying? It's not that much of a disturbance. Probably if you talk to one of these 80-year-old, you know, grandmothers and that, then they won't think it's too weird. You know, they'll say, yeah. You know, so, you know, you're sitting there and you go out onto the veranda, you know, to catch that morning sun, and the other ladies all come out, and, you know, you ask, oh, where's Beth? And then one of them says, you didn't hear? Right? You know, so after many of that, you know, after a while, it's just kind of like, okay, this is the reality. Flower, okay. Yeah. It's a little too dark, right? Okay. Okay, when by the disposition of his heart he becomes indifferent to all objects, he obtains eternal happiness both in this world and after death. Indifferent to all objects means there's no object where by seeing it he ever thinks that there's something you can enjoy. Right? So that's the point of indifference here. Indifference doesn't mean you don't care so you don't deal nicely. Indifferent means there's no situation, there's no object that one considers I could gain something from this. So that's what we mean by the indifference. He who has in this manner gradually given up all attachments and is freed from the pairs of opposite reposes in Brahman alone. So it says here gradually, right? One is you're taking the whole lifetime because this is now the end of the ashram dharma. Right? So the whole lifetime is there. And even within the ashram, one's gradually going through and just seeing to everything. So it says, freed from all the pairs of opposites. Because it's the pairs of opposites that are the problem. So that's why indifference. You don't love it, you don't hate it. You know? It's not great, it's not terrible.
The source of inspiration for sannyasi
is transcendence. That's why it always keeps going back to reposes in Brahman alone and everything. So in other words, the situation is transcendental. It's just that everything is just Brahman, and so therefore there's nothing here to be distracted by. So therefore one's you know, study means for us, then our study about Krishna, our sadhana, our association with devotees, there's nothing to become distracted by. It's where you situate yourself. The brahmacharya is situated in the ashram. You know, so the simple life and all that, so there's nothing much to get distracted by, so he just studies. The grihastha is situating himself with, you know, as much facilities as naturally is arranged by his nature. Right? But the point is that in that situation, he's trying to connect everything to Krishna. Right? But you're having to go through this facility, then, you know, is used for Krishna. You know, so you're having to go through a few steps there. More direct, better. But here you're situating yourself on the platform of Brahman, so now it's just a matter from Brahman to Bhagavan. You know, so it's very close. It's like from goodness to pure goodness, it's very close. So passion up to pure goodness, that's a little bit more. Ignorance to pure goodness, that's even more of a, you know what I'm saying? So it's just that if there's less attachments you're dealing with, then to be able to connect yourself with Krishna becomes very easy. So the point is sannyas means that there is nothing that you see in relationship to yourself as for you to control and enjoy. So that means you're situated on the Brahman platform. Now if you're always absorbed in Krishna, then, you know, this kind of platform isn't what's prominent. Does that make sense? In other words, the Brahman platform is it's. It's a situation of that one is not connected with the world. So, but the point is the mind wants to be connected with interaction and activity. So, therefore, then for the devotee being connected to Krishna, then this isn't really noticed. That was like that. But of it being here is that the man can notice it. Like that. And then as gradually they become more absorbed in Krishna, then that's there. But for the woman, basically it's a matter of absorption in material rasa or absorption in spiritual. So this platform of just existence doesn't actually have any meaning. You know, to the feminine nature. Does that make sense? Because the feminine nature is situated in the mind, so that's prayojana. The prayojana is, you know, results and experiences. Right? So existence is just for security. You know what I'm saying? If you think about it, if you think of security, security is being thought about. Its inspiration, of course, is it means attachment to one's attachments. But if you think about thinking of security, it's just facts. You know what I'm saying? So all this is talking about is that plane, but not with that it's security because one's attachments will stay in place, but it's just that's the platform from which you just move forward to Krishna. Does that make sense?
This stage is not for women.
That's why women don't take sannyas.
Still, they have to get more men.
Yes, but it's just you just switch that. But where is that security? The security then is in Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So then it becomes dynamic. So the view doesn't have to change. Do you understand what I'm meaning? Because you're saying this platform lacks that inspiration and all those things. But if a woman actually thinks about what is security, there is no emotional aspect to it. It's just plain, these are just facts. You have this facility, this whatever it is, money, these relations, and this and that. And these are all playing their particular part in the whole plan. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So it's being applied within the material sphere. So what this is between the spheres. So one can do it within this sphere, or one can switch it to the, you know, devotional, the transcendental. Does that make sense? But what this is talking about, the same principle, but it's between the two. So it doesn't really mean much to the ladies, because the man can just exist, right? When the man is just existing there in the house, it annoys the women, right? Because where's the relation, where's the interaction, where's, you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? But what I was saying is about one's touch to this element is through security. Because when the woman is in that mode, then it is pretty mercenary. You know what I'm saying? So it's not something that's really discussed. You know what I'm saying? So it becomes, because this is in between. So when it's being discussed, it's not you're working within the material and being indifferent to it. It's, you're not working within the material. You're not looking at it as material, because material means there's opportunities for sense gratification. This is that it's just Brahman, it's just Krishna's energy, so there is no option for sense gratification. Does that make sense? Right? And so For the woman, it'll be there's no option. It's not that there's no option for sense gratification. There's just so many options how you could serve Krishna. Is that understood? But it's the same platform. But the one is just describing the platform itself. The other is describing what you'll do in that platform. Right? So in other words, the man can meditate. He'll switch from one to the other. You know what I'm saying? He says, activity, stop the activity, then engage in the activity, in the positive. The woman just switches from the negative to the positive. Right? There is no interim state. So this is describing that interim state. That's why it's not a people thing. So this is sannyas. So that's why ladies don't take sannyas. Ladies taking sannyas, it's a social convention. It's just established them. They didn't get what they were looking for in social life, so now they'll get it by being the sannyasi, right? Otherwise, why is it they get a cute little panda? You know, why don't they have the big one that gets in the way that you can't do anything with? You know, you can't get into the car, you can't do anything. You know, while you're standing there, you know, and you're thinking, yeah, the sannyasi, you got your dunda. Everyone behind you is thinking, wow, here's the transcendental windshield wiper. Right, you know, because when they're standing there and dancing like this in the front, it goes back and forth like this in front of the deities, you know, it's kind of like annoying. You know what I'm saying? So if this woman sannyasi was there and heard behind her the brahmachari say that, that would be a freak out. So it's either you have to roast them or run up to your room and fall on the bed and cry. You know what I'm saying? So sannyasi is not for women. Say whatever they like. But the point is it doesn't work. You know what I'm saying? If they're doing it, they're not sannyasis. Maybe external, but the point was made here is it's not by the external that makes a sannyas. Then if someone says, well, most of the men aren't, yeah, but the men could be. Maybe they're not, but by practice they could be. But the woman, even with practice, never will be. You know? It's like getting out your favorite, you know, whatever it is, your dachshund or something, streamlined and everything. You know, and take him out in the backyard and, you know, slowly train him how he'll fly. It's not going to happen. You know what I'm saying? Unless, of course, as before, how you say, it mentioned about, you know, mushrooms not being recommended. Unless you take enough mushrooms, then maybe your dog flies. At least you'll think he flies. I don't know if he gets that experience, but... Okay, when by the disposition of his heart he becomes indifferent to all objects, he obtains eternal happiness both in this world and after death. He who has in this manner gradually given up all attachments and is freed from all the pairs of opposites, reposes in Brahman alone. All that has been declared above depends on meditation, for he who is not proficient in the knowledge of that which refers to the soul reaps not the full reward of the performance of the rites. So here is by contemplation the knowledge. So that's why in preparation for the vanaprastha is studying. Right? So he can attain this nature as the vanaprastha or formally take sannyas. But the point is he gets the result because he's meditating on this knowledge. So that means the result means he's freed from the material. Right? But only when he meditates on Krishna, then it becomes be actually situated properly in the spirit. Let him constantly recite those texts of the Veda which refer to the sacrifice, those referring to the deities, and those which treat of the soul and are contained in the concluding portions of the Veda, Vedanta. Right, so the Upanishads, that's the concluding portion. That is the refuge of the ignorant. Right? Because before that, the Yapurva Mimamsa is dealing with the yajñas and all those things like that, but it's not dealing with the Uttara Mimamsa, with the Upanishads. They completely avoid that part. That is the refuge of the ignorant. And even that, the refuge of those who know the meaning of the Veda. That is the protection of those who seek bliss in heaven and those who seek endless beatitude. Right? So here, then it's also very hidden. This is the last, basically, point being made. So the Vedanta is the refuge of everybody, whether they know it or not. Right? So even for the ignorant, it's the refuge. One is that everybody, by understanding the Vedanta, they will all become to the transcendental platform. But otherwise, even the ignorant, then actually all they're engaged in is interaction with the Lord in His potencies as He's spread throughout the material creation. So He's not... they're not actually dealing with anything else. They may think they are dealing with dead matter, but they're not. They're only dealing with the Lord. And so those who know the meaning of the Veda, then they understand it's the protection of those who seek bliss in heaven, those who seek endless beatitude. So endless beatitude would be, you can take it also as heaven's supposed to be endless. Of course it ends, but you know, the number of years they tack on there, then you don't worry about it. You know, like that. Brahman, then that's supposed to be endless, though you get bored, so you come back. So only transcendence in service to Krishna, that is endless. Conclusion on ascetics. Twice for a man who becomes an ascetic, after the successive performance of the above-mentioned acts, shakes off sin here below and reaches the highest Brahman. Right, so the highest Brahman would be devotional service. Because right, remember, all this is supposed to be in connection with the Lord. That was what the question the sages put to Lord Brahma. So everything throughout the whole text has to be seen in relation to that. Like the Brahma Sutras, then Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now it's time to inquire about the Supreme, about Brahman. So that means the whole text is about inquiring about Brahman. So this, the whole text is about how to connect what your duties to the Lord. Conclusion of Ashram Dharma. Thus the law valid for the self-restrained ascetics has been explained to you. Now listen to the particular duties of those who give up the rites prescribed by the Vedas. Okay? The tenfold law. Okay. The student, the householder, the hermit, and the ascetic. These constitute four separate orders, which all spring from the order of householders. Right? Because householders produce students. Householders retire into hermits and become ascetics. You know, so therefore, they all spring from the order of householders. But all or even any of these orders assumed successively in accordance with the institutes of the sacred law lead the brahmana who acts by the preceding rules to the highest state. Reading. Yajñavalkya states, following a particular ashram is not the cause of religion. He alone is a religious man who practices all the regulations laid down for each order. Therefore, one should not treat another in a way which is distasteful to his own self. Yeah, just how you deal. I guess he was just showing that it's the mentality. And in accordance with the precepts of the Veda and of the Smriti, the household is declared to be superior to all of them, for he supports the other three. As all rivers, both great and small, find a resting place in the ocean, even so men of all orders find protection with the householders. By twice-born men belonging to any of these four orders, the tenfold law must be ever carefully obeyed. So here's the tenfold law. Contentment, forgiveness, self-control, abstention from unrighteously appropriating anything, obedience to the laws of purification, coercion of the organs, wisdom, knowledge of the Supreme Soul, truthfulness, and abstention from anger form the tenfold law. So in other words, all manu is based on these ten. Okay? So if these ten are there, you can make the whole thing work. Narad Muni in the 7th canto of Bhagavad Gita, giving the same explanation of Varnashram, he expands it to 30. Because he includes, you know, the Shravanam, Kirtan, Smarana, Bandana, all these different activities. So here, Vriti, Manu later summarizes the tenfold into five categories. One, abstention from injuring creatures. Two, truthfulness. Three, abstention from unlawfully appropriating the goods of others. Four, purity. Five, and control of the organs. Should have been and five, control of the organs. Manu is declared to be the summary of the law for the four castes. That's in the 10th chapter. So through the performance of the tenfold law, these five main categories are obtained. So in other words, you practice the 10, you'll get this 5. So then it's mentioned below. Abstention from injuring creatures is obtained through abstention from anger. Truthfulness is one of the tenfold law and is obtained by the two elements of wisdom and knowledge of the Supreme Soul. 3. Abstention from unlawfully appropriating the goods of others is also one of the ten law and is additionally obtained by the three elements contentment, forgiveness, and self-control. Purity is obtained through obedience to the rules of purification. And control of the organs is attained by coercion of the organs. You get control if you control them. If you don't control them, you won't get control. Does that make sense? One devotee was telling me about they would go and learn to ride a horse. You know, they had an interest in riding horses. So then, you know, you start with some, you know, they get some easy horse that doesn't give you any trouble. You know, you get on there, even if you don't know what you're doing, the horse is not going to do anything crazy, right? You know, like that. But eventually you get up to, you know, horses, right? You know? So then they were having a lot of problem. Horse wouldn't do what he wanted, this, that, nothing like that. You know, so he'd been with these other horses that were, you know, very easy to control. So then suddenly now, here it's like, you know, what's going on? So in his mind, it's a bad horse, right? So then, you know, told the trainer, says, this horse doesn't do what you want. And then the trainer said, no, it's that you allow it to do what it shouldn't do. Right? So in other words, what we're saying about the senses. If you don't control the senses, you can't control them. So then they said, okay, let's switch horses. So then the trainer got onto the horse that was supposed to be not behaving bad, and it did exactly everything it's supposed to do. Right? And so then afterwards, then the trainer says, the horse knows if you know what you're doing. If you don't, they'll take advantage. And if you do, they won't. Yeah. Saint Chris. So therefore you control the senses. I mean you gain control of the senses by controlling the senses. Right? So therefore it uses coercion. Just to make that distinction. Those Brahmins who thoroughly study the tenfold law and after studying obey it, enter the highest state. Right, so these are the qualities by which all your duties will go very nicely. And since the duties are meant to be engaged in the Lord's service, it means the devotional service will go nicely. The same time is, if this is a problem, you just engage in devotional service, gradually these will come. But know it that until they come, materially, it will be a problem. Because if you bother others, they'll bother you. You don't control your senses, then you'll be gloomy from the state of passion. Right? Like that. If you're not pure, then always impure thoughts, impure situations will come up. Right?
To do devotional service, but
that's why it says study, because the scriptures talk about these things. It's not the prominent, it's not the main, but these are, once if one is aware, then in one's service, because these are what get in the way, contentment, right? If you want more and more, then that means you're controlled by the pairs of opposites. You know, you like this and you don't like that. So then the mode of passion, it always ends in misery. Right? Forgiveness. If you don't forgive, no one's going to forgive you. And so just the feuds go on forever. Right? I mean, it's going to say the Hatfields and McCoys, you know, they've been for hundreds of years, you know, and then we have a little bit farther east, they've been going on for 4,000 years. Same thing. Right? Yeah. Self-control, if you don't control yourself, then the situations get out of hand. Right? Abstention from unrighteously appropriating anything. You take something that is not yours to take, then something of yours that you do need will be taken. Or you'll get the reaction to having taken that, you know. You took it, and then you find out who it belonged to. It happens to be about, you know, 2.5 meters tall and weigh about 500 kilos. Not good. Right? Purification. If you're not pure, the mind will be impure, everything will be impure, so then Krishna consciousness will be harder. Right? Coercion of the organs. If they're not controlled, how will they be engaged in Krishna's service? Right? Wisdom means that knowledge that comes by practice. So if you don't apply it, the wisdom you gain, the wisdom that others have gained, if you don't apply it, you'll always do something stupid, always wrong. So then there'll always be problems. Knowledge of the Supreme Soul. If we ignore that, then we're just bound by the modes. Truthfulness. So that means it's about the Lord. You know, the fact means you're seeing the facts in connection with the Lord. You know, because most of the time just means if you quote the facts, then you'll say that's truthful. No, it's only when the facts are connected to the Lord it becomes truth. Right? Just like if you perform an activity only if it's connected to the Lord is it good. Right? I cook, it's only if it's connected to the Lord it becomes prasad. Right? So truth is only actually truth when the facts are connected with the Lord. So it's not that we're meaning two different kinds of truth. No, it's the same truth. It's just whether you take it further or not. Right? Abstention from anger, because anger comes after frustration. So that means I'm the doer and I'm the enjoyer. So I did it and the result didn't come, or I got the result I didn't enjoy. Right? Or the result came, someone else got it and they enjoyed. That's why I become angry. Right? So that's why these things... Materially, you will not do well if you don't follow them, and spiritually, you won't do well if you don't follow them. So just that's why Manu gives these. These 10 are essential. And that means you get to these 5. Abstention from injuring others or creatures, truthfulness, abstention from unlawfully appropriating the goods of others, purity, and control of the organs. Right? If those are, it means out of this 10, focus on these 5. Because all the others are actually in support of these. Right? The other 5 are in support of this. Okay. Renunciation. Twice for a man who, with collected mind, follows the tenfold law and has paid his 3 debts, may, after learning the Vedanta, according to the prescribed rule, become an ascetic. Right? So the point was being made before is what it says now here. Okay, thus the law valid for the self-restrained ascetics has been explained. Now listen to the particular duties of those who give up the rites prescribed by the Vedas. Right, so the duties are this tenfold law. So everyone follows it, everyone practices it. So you practice that in connection with the Vedanta, and then one comes to the platform of sannyas. Sannyas meaning engaging everything in the Lord's service. The 3 debts that must be paid are, 1, the debt to the sages, which is paid by study and teaching the scriptures, 2, the debt to the gods, which is paid through sacrifice, and 3, the debt to the forefathers, which is liquidated through begetting a son and the due performance of the Shraddha rites. Vedanta is the transcendental knowledge of the relationship between the soul and the Supreme Soul. Yes. Yes, but the point is it's not that when you become Krishna conscious you're freed and that's it. No, it's because you're Krishna conscious, therefore you're free. If you're not Krishna conscious, then you're bound again. You know, if somebody leaves Krishna consciousness, he has to pay these debts.
Is that not
you're trying to be, then it's worked out. But the point is that because you're always trying to be Krishna conscious, therefore you're always free from these debts. You know, the point is, the grihastha has these debts. They have to be paid. So if you're being Krishna conscious, the activities of Krishna consciousness automatically pay the debts. If you stop Krishna consciousness, then they're not paying the debts. Right? So therefore, how are you going to pay them? You know what I'm saying? That's the point. So therefore, Krishna consciousness is the solution. It's not that I become Krishna conscious, so it's gone. So even if I'm not so Krishna conscious, then it doesn't matter. Because then, what's the, that complacency is not useful in Krishna consciousness. No, it's always dynamic at every moment. You know, because it's kind of like, I did it. No, but what are you doing right now? You can't say, I was Krishna conscious before. What are you doing now? Having given up the performance of all rites, throwing off the guilt of his sinful acts, subduing his organs and having studied the Veda, he may live at his ease under the protection of his son. Vritti, the guilt of one's sinful acts is thrown off by renunciation. This is explained in the next verse. This verse describes the situation of Kutichan, the first of the four orders of sannyas, when one lives away from home in a kuti, outside the village, but still receive food from home by the son's arrangement. He was thus given up the performance of all the rites, who is solely intent on his own particular object, and is free from desires, destroys his guilt by his renunciation, obtains the highest state. Vritti, giving up the performance of all rites indicates freedom from activities that produce material results. Right? Because we're performing all the rites because it's a religious thing to do. It creates an auspicious environment. So all that is given up. Things that are naturally part of the devotional process, those aren't given up. It's just those things that would be create the auspiciousness, because you have to have auspiciousness in grihastha life. Otherwise, how do you get the facilities? You're supposed to engage the senses. How do you engage the senses if there's no facility to engage the senses? Right? So therefore, auspicious rites are performed. But at this point, then one doesn't have to do that. Your son's doing that. He's taking care of the house. So you don't have to worry about it.
So it appears that by having a son, that one death is done. If he's a good son.
Yeah, but that's the point. How does he become a good son? Yeah, and who's got to do that? Very clever, very clever. Okay. But then one has to be fully supported. Huh? A side detail, right? Yeah. Okay. Being solely intent on his own particular object means focused on the Supreme Lord. Because the object that you're trying to obtain. Being freed from desire, one is consequently freed from anger, and as a result, one will not injure others, but will rather work for the welfare of all by preaching God consciousness. By attachment, one is bound by one's good and bad reactions, and by renunciation, one is freed from the same. Therefore, the sannyasi destroys his guilt by renunciation, and thus obtains the highest state, Vaikuntha. Thus, the fourfold holy law of Brahmanas, which after death yields imperishable rewards, has been declared to you. Now learn the duty of kings. Right? So the four orb means the fourfold means here the four ashrams. Right? But the mentality that they're supposed to be carried out is the tenfold law. Okay. Next section.
The 10 laws applicable to everyone.
The 10 laws applicable to everyone, yes.
Then everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. It means these are the moves by which one performs one's duties. Right? It means the fourfold law has to be practiced. So that means you have to have the right understanding, the right attitude. So that's the tenfold law. So Varna Dharma, right? That was Ashram Dharma. So this is the third section. You know, the overall. The first chapter is the first section, then the second through the sixth is the second, then the seventh through the 11th is the third, and then the 12th is the fourth. Right? Because 2nd through 6th was Ashram Dharma, and now 7th through 11th will be Varna Dharma. Right? Then you have the, how, you know, means, in other words, how the Lord descends into this world, you know, as the Vishwarupa, and how he establishes the right and wrong, and the orders, and the Varna Ashram system. And then the 12th chapter is telling how one gets, you know, can get freed from this entanglement and go back to God. Varna Dharma. The natural conduct of the four varnas. So this is natural. Late after describing what's normal, then you discuss what's not normal. Right? That's the standard way of dealing with knowledge. It's just like, if you want to know how to deal with something that's wrong, first understand what's right. Otherwise, how do you know what's wrong? Kshatriya Dharma. So this is topic 16 then. The duty of kings, right? So 16 of 25. So we're basically almost two-thirds of the way through. No, the Brahma is the ashram, is the varna duties. It is not a difference. Kshatriya then, because, you know, one is there's a need for these things, but it's also is that who does it, because the ego is not. So therefore then you have to have the separate duties. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Okay. Because the occupational duties of a Brahmin, they're how ashram functions. You know, you have to be trained, you know, you have to follow all the different rules, all these different things. So then that is their duty. They practice and teach that. Right? And so then, to have a society, then you have to administrate it, you have to have economics, and we need, you know, all the little, you know, somewhat unlimited with arts and everything being performed. So then that keeps everybody else busy. Right? But the fun is that there'll be, I think, 7, 8, 9, there'll be 3 chapters on Kshatriya Dharma, half a page on Vaishya Dharma, and 2 shlokas on Shudra Dharma. But don't worry, there'll be many more, you know, verses on the duties of women. So you don't have to worry that something being left out here. Varna Dharma. Okay. The duty of kings. I will declare the duty of kings and show how a king should conduct himself, how he was created, and how he can obtain the highest success. Right? So, how he behaves, what his duties are, how he behaves, and how he can obtain the highest success through the performance of those duties. Right? Because the idea is that through the ashram duties, you can go back to Godhead, so it should be through the varna duties, you can go back to Godhead. Right? It shouldn't change. Right? If the principle's there, it should apply to both. The origin of 16.1, the origin of kings. A kshatriya who has received, according to the rule, the sacrament prescribed by the Vedas must duly protect this whole world. Riti Yajnavalkya states, whatever is acquired should be given to the vipras, and protection should be given to the subjects. There is no religion higher than this for kings. So here is that he has, according to the sacrament, then he... So he's gone to the Gurukul, he's graduated. So he's received according to the sacrament. So now then he can go on to performing the duties of a kshatriya. Because all varna dharma is grihastha dharma. You understand? You don't have varna dharma for those who are not grihastha. Does that make sense? The brahmachari, it doesn't matter what nature they are, they're all brahmacharis. They don't have an occupation. Vanaprasthas, they don't have an occupation. Sannyasis don't have an occupation. means other than what is ashram occupation, right? It means studying, teaching, being austere. Does that make sense? You know, performance of sacrifice. So Varna Dharma means Grihastha. So technically all we're dealing with is we've already dealt with the four ashrams and Brahminical, you know, their duties as a Grihastha. So we've already dealt with five out of eight. Right? Does that make sense? So up to this point, whatever was before, you know, except for a few details, it's all very familiar. Right? Why? Because Prabhupada's given all this, and devotees are practicing it. So that means five out of eight, the devotees are practicing. Right? And then, somehow or another, they'll say, we need to establish Varnashram Dharma. Five out of eight's already, that's more than half. So that means Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras you have to put in. Shudras are already got a job. Vaishyas are already making money. So what's left? You simply have to establish Kshatriyas. You don't have to establish growing cabbages. You have to establish Kshatriyas. Because if there's no Kshatriyas, there are no cabbages, right? Because if there's no Kshatriyas protecting you, then the army from this side comes marching across the land and steps on your cabbage patch. Or they pick up the cabbages and take them with them, right? And then, you know, a couple of days later, then another army marches back the other way. You understand? So only if there's the king's protecting can you grow cabbages. Right? Simple. Yes. Yeah, because it means we've already explained Brahminical, so then, you know, this is the balance of it. The other three eighths in a nutshell. Right? Yes.
In our case, in our society, the Kshatriyas would be an issue.
You're taking it because they're protecting the devotees. So you mean administration and anything connected with that. So you would take it as leadership. But we don't necessarily mean leadership meaning, you know, who's giving a class or who's inspiring in festivals or japa or like this. Because that's all ashram. It means that who's taking care of things, organization and stuff that requires administration. Because a lot of this is going on, but it's just not scientific. Right? Even the modern society still follows Varnashram, but it's not scientific because things are mixed. Because they're Varnashankara, so therefore things are mixed. So the idea of Varnashram is make it scientific. People are saying, no, we're living in science, so this is all old, sentimental stuff. No, modern is sentimental. This is science. Because they have the science, but what do they do with the science? Oh, science has helped us so much. What has it done? It's given us gizmos and gadgets, which we use according to our whims. We don't use them scientifically. Right? So he must duly protect this whole world. For when these creatures, being without a king, through fear, dispersed in all directions, the Lord created a king for the protection of this whole creation. Right? So, to protect the people, then the Lord created kings. Taking for that purpose eternal particles of Indra, of the wind, of Yama, the sun, of fire, of Varuna, the moon, and the Lord of wealth, Kuvera. So, the potencies of these eight, these are what are established that makes the king. So that means the king has to work according to these. So it's not just I'm in charge. I don't notice that was one of them, you know, like that. So it's not one of the qualities that the person would go, I'm in charge. That's not, I mean, that he has the chutzpah to say that. That's one thing. But just the word itself doesn't do anything. You know, just like it says, just because you say Brahman, it doesn't make a Brahman. Or sannyas, it doesn't make sannyas. Just like when you say the name of the fruit that purifies the water doesn't become pure. Yes. No, I'm the authority that's there because that's the fact. You know, but that I'm in charge, you are in charge, but the point is that you have to actually act as someone in charge. So the person who's actually successful, then it's because they're manifesting these qualities. And depending on what to what degree and which ones, then they're successful in those areas. And it'll be explained later. I don't think it'll be explained here. Because a king has been formed of particles of those lords of the gods, he therefore surpasses all created beings in luster. Right? So king, everybody likes to talk about kings. Why? Because they're very brilliant. They're very attractive. Right? There's potency there. Right? And like the sun, he burns eyes and hearts. Nor can anyone on earth even gaze on him. Because it's just so powerful. So like in the Chinese culture, just so that no one will have their eyes and hearts will burn. So therefore, when the emperor comes by, everyone has to look the other direction. Right? See, so that's even following the Vedic rules. Right? You know, like that. And it also, you see, even the Mahabharata, it says that they're very hard to look at. So that's why, that technically for the Kshatriya means only those who have other power like that, other Kshatriyas or the powerful Brahmins like that, because Brahmins are more powerful. So therefore, they have no problem looking. But your common person, it's very difficult for them to sit, talk, or look them in the eye and all that. So also then, just in family life, only Kshatriya women can actually handle the Kshatriya men, you know, or they're from powerful Brahmin families, and they can handle it. Like that. It says their eyes are like that of a bull. You know, not like, you know, the dog, you know, lotus. No, they're like bull eyes, very focused, very penetrating. Okay. Through his supernatural power, he is fire and wind. He the sun and moon. He the Lord of Justice, Yama. He Kuvera. He Varuna. He great Indra. Even an infant king must not be despised from an idea that he is a mere mortal, for he is a great deity in human form. Fire burns one man only if he carelessly approaches it. The fire of a king's anger consumes the whole family, together with its cattle and its hoard of property. Right? In other words, you don't insult the king, right? You know, fire, you'll get burnt, but with the king, you'll lose a lot more. Right? So you just don't bother kings. Having fully considered the purpose, his power and the place, and the time, he assumes by turns many different shapes for the complete attainment of justice. So here is what we were discussing before. Now comes into these things when he's talking practical. These are the points. We'll say, no, he's in charge, he's this, he's that, he has control. No, these are the points to be made. He protects the world, and having fully considered the purpose of his, you know, purpose, then his power and the place and time. So unless you've considered all that, you can't actually make a plan in which you will do things. And it's not just one, it says many. Because for one thing you do this, another thing you do that, and like this, it continues on. So it's very practical. Kshatriyas are practical. People sit around in rooms and discuss and have meetings, come up with a plan, and you never see it get done. There's not one Kshatriya in the room. Kshatriyas will not sit and just plan if it's not going. It has to be that the plan is even going somewhere. You can quote Shastra, you can tell stories, but if it's not actually in connection with getting the plan done or making a solid plan that then can be applied, Kshatriya will not be tolerant of it. Right? He'll go and sit and listen to a Pauranic, a Brahmin, tell stories and this and be quite happy because he's not having to make a plan. But if he's making a plan, he can only take advice from others who can practically tell him what will work. You know, just like we saw there, you get the flavors of each one as you go through it. You know, like you sesanya, you get the flavor of what is actually Kshatriya. Like that. You know, so we're used to bureaucrats. Bureaucrats are nowhere near Kshatriya. You know. He in whose favor resides Padma, the goddess of fortune, in whose valor dwells victory, and whose anger abides death, is formed of the luster of all gods. The man who in his exceeding folly hates him will doubtlessly perish, for the king quickly makes up his mind to destroy such a man. as someone who's against him, he'll go. If you're not against, like, that's why Kshatriyas don't bother Brahmins, because they don't hate kings. So why should they bother them? Let no man therefore transgress that law which benefits those favored, nor his orders which inflict pain on those in his disfavor. Right? So in other words, there's laws that have been established that favor somebody. You don't go against those laws. Or if he's found disfavor with somebody, you don't go against those orders. Because otherwise there's a problem. Creation of punishment. For the king's sake, the Lord formally created his own son, punishment, the protector of all creatures. Right? Does this make sense? So the first part is anybody can do. So therefore, devotees, because they're devotees, they're automatically Brahmins. So everybody can appreciate ashram dharma. But now when we get into this, basically, unless one is what one is leadership material or connected with that, the next chapters nobody will appreciate. This is where people start freaking out. It means before they could a little bit with this and that here and there, you can get a few issues, you know. But here is where you start getting serious issues, because and this is the way the world works. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And anybody who says otherwise shouldn't be listening to this, because they're not a leader. Punishment, the protector of all creatures, an incarnation of the law, formed of Brahman's glory. Right? Through fear of him, all created beings, both the immovable and the movable, allow themselves to be enjoyed and swerve not from their duties. Right? So in other words, the Vaishya makes his money and gives in charity only out of fear. Because if he wasn't fearful, he wouldn't give any money. Nobody would follow any laws if there was not fear of punishment. In the Bhagavatam it says that the wind blows only out of fear of the Supreme Lord. The sun rises and sets on time only out of fear of Vishnu. It just goes on and on and on and on about it. All the devas, everyone is only doing something out of fear. That's the basic principle. If someone has crossed that and is doing because they want to please Krishna, that's better. But the point is the king doesn't have to manage them. He has to manage everybody else. Because those persons do what they're supposed to do, so there is no management. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
So the main reason for punishment is to establish order.
Punishment is to establish order, but punishment is only given if it's correct. That's what we'll be seeing.
Because before it was those who were this paper. Paper seems like, you know, I like and don't like.
A Kshatriya likes doing his duties. Just like, is the Grihastha supposed to take care of his wife and children? It's his duty. Does he like doing it? So that's the whole point. Brahmins do things means because basically it's not so much because they like or don't like that platform. It's just the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do, and they like doing the right thing. Right? It doesn't matter what the results. They like doing the right thing. Vaishyas like doing the right thing only because it gives profit. But if they can get profit without doing the right thing, they'll do it. And Shudras, it's wherever the motions go. So if they're in a protected environment so all they can do is right things, then they're safe. And their emotions will flow through correct activities. But if they're in an environment where there is illegal activities, their emotions will move through that. So that's why they have to be protected. Yeah, does that make sense? Okay. Having fully considered the time and the place of the offense, the strength and the knowledge of the offender, let him justly inflict that punishment on men who act unjustly. Right? He has to consider all this. So it's not a matter of his own sentiment. He likes or doesn't like. But the time, the place, the strength and the knowledge, the time and place of the offense, and the strength and knowledge of the offender. Then he decides what to do. It's not, so therefore each individual case has to be individually dealt with. Does that make sense? So that's right there immediately why bureaucracy cannot take the position of a king. Because bureaucracy means one rule fits all. Because bureaucrats hate dealing with individual cases. They absolutely loathe it. Okay, sorry. That's the point. But the king, each case is dealt with according to its specific individual merit. And if nobody likes it, but it's according to the law, and he has the support of his senior men, he couldn't care less. And he has the strength to establish it. That's Kshatriya. Right? So it's not popular opinion. They couldn't care less about popular opinion. It's what's according to the law. Does that make sense? Yes.
So here it says strength and the knowledge of the offender. So the knowledge, does it mean that it has to be taken into consideration why this person would do this thing? So the motive.
The motive behind it, also how much he does know. Like in certain cases, for the Brahmin, because he knows more, the actual punishment will be very, very less, because he knows what's right and wrong, so if he's reminded of that, he can self-correct. But there's some cases where, because he has the knowledge, the reaction's greater. You know, when it comes to Varnashankara, the reaction's greater for Brahmins than it is for others, because only Brahmins can create the worst kind of Varnashankara. Right? Because a Brahmin and a Shudra, you get a Nishada, but a Kshatriya and a Shudra doesn't get a Nishada. Vaishya and a Shudra is just kind of, you know, Shudra and a Shudra, hey, you get another Shudra. You know. Does that make sense? You know, so you get the worst from that. So that's the only case really where you see that it's the law is stronger on Brahmins. But in all other rules it's less strong. Because they can self-correct. But Kshatriyas, Vaishudras generally can't. Because there's too much passion, too much ignorance. But for the Brahmin, because he's situated in knowledge, in goodness, therefore he can self-correct.
Okay. So the severeness of the punishment should be according to the ability of the person to self-correct.
Yes, according to that. Also how much they can handle. You know, like, you know, the frail old lady, you know, you don't give 20 lashes, you know, but the big, you know, big 10-foot tall, you know, brute, you might give 50 lashes. You know, I mean, you know, it's like that, but, you know. The old lady, you just look at her, you know, like that, and she's finished, you know. So it's a matter, you have to see that also. So strength means mental strength, sensual strength, bodily strength, you know, intellectual strength, all these things. So all, in other words, the nature of the person, right, and the nature of the offense. You know, what place it happened and this and that. You know, so it's going to be different depending upon what it is. You know what I'm saying? The guy stole something from his brother in the joint family. Right? He went into his brother's room and took something off his shelf. So that's not going to be as big an offense as if he walked outside, gone to his neighbor's house, and took something from there. You know, so all these things have to be. Does that make sense? So, in other words, is one will see from this, it brings out that it's not just automatic. It's not that anything goes wrong, you have this, you know, regular kind of way of dealing with it. No, each case is individual. That's why it's others don't like it. It's a hassle for them, but it's the hassle that Kshatriyas can tolerate. Just like for most people to do business, that's a hassle. The Vaishyas have no problem with it. It is a problem, but they don't mind the problem. So the same way as a Kshatriya doesn't mind this problem. Like that. That's why they're qualified to do it. They handle everything. They only have a high court judge if they're busy doing something else. Otherwise, they sit in the court, they deal with everything. Because you see, as the laws come in, all the 18 titles of the laws, they deal with them all. Even as a border dispute, they go out and do it themselves. Like that. Or, if it's necessary, then they have someone else do it. But it's not that dealing with the law, that's what they do. So there's nothing below them like that. Because the point is the law has to be dealt with properly. So only someone who has this qualification can deal with it. So if he has someone else who can deal, then they can do it. But otherwise, on a daily, if he doesn't have something else to do, why wouldn't he do it? Like that. So the idea of Kshatriya is more directly involved with actual administration. He's directly involved. So this first section is just telling how punishment regulates society. The next section will tell of the qualifications of someone who can get punished.
He's mentioned as the Lord from all eternity. His own son punishment.
Is his own son? Yeah, it comes from the Lord.
It
means punishment is the concept. The potency of it comes directly from the Lord. Otherwise, some would say, "Oh, punishment's not necessary." Yeah, a few group of individuals who are very intellectual, who are situated in goodness, there's no real need much of punishment. But the thing is the rest of society isn't like that. That group of individuals. Therefore, even though they're intelligent, they're sentimental. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Is there a name?
Sorry?
There is a name of the son of the Lord who is punishment.
His name's punishment.
Punishment. But there is no...
Like Harvey or something? Horatio.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.